On today's episode of The Good Word, friend of the show, Monica McNutt joins us. We talk about her New York Knicks. We also talk about Tyrese Maxey and the Philadelphia 76ers. We also talk about the return of Miles Bridges to the Charlotte Hornets. That and much more on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie Network. And we are also on YouTube. Get us wherever you're going to get your podcast. If you're on YouTube, you can see the wonderful face sitting next to me and hear that laugh. You hear that laugh on ESPN. You hear that laugh on MSG's radio network. She all was places. All Big Ten at Georgetown. She
East,
had a wicked.
Big East. I got to stop. Excuse me.
Oh, my sorry. What I say? My bad.
Big East. Continue.
I live in Big Ten country. My bad.
Mm-mm, can't relate.
All Big East at Georgetown. She had a wicked jab, step, and pull, right?
I did.
Jabs, swing through, pull. The great Monica McNutt, who's now the lead analyst for Knicks games. We should put that out there because that is a huge accomplishment. Monica, how you doing?
I'm good, Vinny. It's good to be with you. ESPN New York radio has been tremendous. I have to tell you, though, Clippers game? I think it was a Clippers game. I'm getting ready to do a hit in our pregame show, and this guy standing there with the Ball Don't Lie cap on. And I'm like, I recognize your cap, and I think I like you, but I'm not sure who you are. And it was Jake. So I'm sorry, Jake, that I didn't recognize you because I didn't recognize you. But shout out to y'all gear for the network. The cat was cute. And Jake and I had a great conversation about the pods that you guys are producing as a team. Of course, about this pod. And so it was a cool moment to meet Jake.
Monica, let me tell you, that man texted me and you would have thought that he had meant like literally you would have. I can't even compare. He was giggling like a fifth grader, okay?
Shout out to Jake. It was cool to meet him. I like people that talk basketball rationally, and we don't have to be forced into crazy takes. We can just observe, digest, and enjoy.
That's what we're going to do today. Okay. We was going to get to some love doctor talk today, but I'm going to save that.
Okay.
I was going to save the love doctor talk for the next time, okay? I'm
going to save it. I see you with your sweatshirt. You was ready. You came ready for
this is just the sweatshirt of the day. That's all.
It's a good sweatshirt, by the way.
I appreciate it. I might have seen you one as a pre-gift. You know what I mean?
Oh,
as one
of those gifts.
See, you know what I'm saying? If you know, you know, right? So, of course, with Monica with the Knicks, we're going to get into that. But just a few notes that I'm curious about your thoughts on. First off, the Knicks played Charlotte a couple of nights ago. Miles Bridges mm-hmm. was not playing, still serving that suspension. It seems like maybe it's because of Charlotte, maybe it's just because so much other stuff is going on. The suspension and now the subsequent return for Miles Bridges after the domestic violence situation where I think he pleaded no contest. And then there's been more allegations coming up where he violated a restraining order, but yet he's still playing. I'm just curious where you sit on that because I don't know how to feel.
That one is loaded, Vinny. The suspension was absolutely appropriate. I think it starts to get murky after that. And I'm not abreast of the most recent details on that, but I do think the suspension was absolutely appropriate. As mm-hmm. thoughtful as Adam Silver and the NBA has been in terms of being the leaders on tackling some challenging issues, understanding the role of sports in society for helping create a better community for all of us at large, to me, even though this is one of the nastier things that you'll have to deal with, it deserves the same mindfulness and attention, right? I think that the league legislating good people, morals is one conversation, but when laws are broken, that's a separate conversation. And that to me is where you can say that it's pretty black and white. If he is not following the procedure set before him to be absolved from this from a societal standpoint and a team standpoint, then there are consequences that follow. To me, you need to be a law-abiding citizen. To be a part of the NBA is a privilege, and that cannot trump your ability to be a productive member of society that does no harm. Like, just I beyond that, I can't really have a conversation. It's that simple for me. Now, like I said, I'm not abreast to all of the details, but if he is violating legal mandates, that's a problem for me. And you shouldn't be allowed just to be back on the basketball court if you're not doing the right thing.
And today, it's actually on Monday. Today, by the time you're hearing this, will probably already have happened. He's scheduled to appear on the summons for violating that domestic violence protective order. So it's a lot of things. You're going through the legal process, and the NBA is not like the NFL, where the NFL came in with a strong hammer really early in Roger Goodell's, you know, tenure, where it looked kind of murky. The NBA is kind of, A, they haven't had all those type of problems, so they haven't had to deal with it as directly. But even when Charles Barkley went at Adam Silver on the season opener about it, Adam seemed kind of flustered. He kind of didn't know exactly what it's not an easy answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy answer to, you know, to address, especially in that particular moment where every situation is different. The criminal justice system runs its course, but at the same time, you can't say, hey, we are part of a bigger collective thing where women have not been, you know, valued and protected. And women are a huge part of our fan base and people we have to consider, while also saying, hey, this guy can have one incident and then maybe have a second incident, and now we get problems. And now we're just going to say, we're not going to revisit that. I feel like that should probably at least be revisited if it hasn't been revisited by the league.
I'm with you in terms of, you're saying it should be revisited in that we can't ignore if he's had another breach.
Right.
Broken the law. Got it. So we're on the same page. And I think anytime something is murky, to me, you defer to the law. And listen, we know historically in this country, the justice system or the injustice system, depending on how you feel on any given day, and both are appropriate, have not necessarily served Black men and Black communities and minority communities accurately. But I think to parse out that and make it your sole argument is a little bit dismissive of the resources of an NBA player.
That's
true. And so I'm not going to say that the justice system is always entirely right, but I imagine that there are lawyers involved in this. And to me, there's got to be a very clear proof, evidence that you are moving in the right direction in terms of not just not breaking whatever restraining orders are out there, but like moving to a place that you can recover so that this is not a repetitive issue, right?
Right.
If we're going to do this whole thing with Ja Morant over touting guns, and now we're going to act like this is not nothing?
Monica, boy, we could have a conversation about Mr. Ja Morant, but we're not going to have it today. At least we're not going to have it on wax.
I get you.
You're right. No, but you're right. You can't. It's a sliding scale. And it's a lot easier for people to adjudicate guns than it is to adjudicate violence versus women, potential violence versus a woman, because things can happen. Things can be said or coerced, you know, on both sides. Things can be coerced to say, oh, no, that didn't really happen because of whatever. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. And you don't want to set the precedent, because you read about these stories happening all the time. Protective order happening, and then 24 hours later, something bad happening after that. And you don't want to give off the appearance as a league or as a league representing society that you are ignoring said thing. It's a tough one. And Monica, I really wanted your perspective on it because you are you. You know what I mean? I wanted to get that perspective before we move forward and talk some basketball, because ain't no easy transition to go from that to hoops. But we're going to just go from that to hoops.
Let's do it.
So before we get to the Knicks, you got to see the James Harden experience last week.
I sure did.
And since James Harden has been in a Clipper uniform, they have not won a game.
It's not been good.
It has not been good, right? They lost to the Grizzlies on Sunday, the 2-8 Grizzlies on Sunday. Paul George went damn near scoreless on Friday night when they got mollywopped by Dallas, the surprisingly good Dallas Mavericks. Did you have doubts? And if you did have doubts, Monica, how those doubts feeling?
So wait, how many games together are they in now? Four?
Four.
Right, four. Okay. So I remember saying immediately, give me 10 games. actually think that number needs to be 20 because I don't think it's going to be great at 10. Like, we might have to double that. Sample size is too small. Of course I have doubts. 100,000, 3,000% I have doubts. I am also one who is a student of the game and willing to learn. And what I do know is that Ty Lue is one of the most respected head coaches around the league, just in terms of his X's and O's ability and the cachet that he has with players as a former player. So if Ty Lue is on board and says it's going to work, teach me. Show me. Let me get my pen and pencil out so I can draw up these plays and write down these characteristics for this scouting report, because I need to know. It was funny, as we prepared for that game in New York, packed, of course, the baseline and the pregame availability, and rightfully so, James Harden warming up. I'm like, this is awkward. James Harden is definitely taking three-point step backs on the left side right behind me. I wonder if I'm in all these shots of these people taking these things. But our host, Bill Pito, goes, do you expect it to be some chemistry issues? I'm like, bro, is water wet? Like, yeah, this is their first game together. And I continue to say this. The last time that we saw insert star add water championship was 2019 with Kawhi Leonard. And you could very well make the case that if the Warriors don't get hurt in the finals, that could have planned out differently. Winning is hard. And I don't think that we should take that for granted. Even with your favorite three athletes, your favorite three All-Stars, your favorite three All-NBA, potential Hall of Fame guys, like, winning is still hard. And you have to have the time on the court together. There is a reason why guys talk about coming back from injuries and how difficult it is to replicate in-game basketball or in-season basketball. You just can't do it. It's nothing like it. Now, from what I've seen so far, I was actually very shocked that Ty Lue pulled those guys with about 4 minutes to go in a ball game. I want to say it might have been like a 15-point lead at that point. The Knicks played really well in that game. I'm pretty sure that was a game RJ Barrett came back after missing two. But I was surprised when he waved the white flag with 4 minutes to go because of what I just said. Like, you just need time on the floor together. As far as the lineups go, what I thought had a glimmer of hope is actually James Harden sort of being your major of the second unit. Because it freed up the floor for him. He was able to create. Russ, he took a few shots in that game, but he's not a prolific three-point shooter. We know that. Russ has space to meet with the other two. There was a little bit more chemistry brewing there. Right. And then, quite frankly, like, James Harden is the head of the snake on your second unit. Like, that second unit has a punch, right? You're going to have an advantage in theory. So that was just kind of my takeaway from it. And so far, not so good. So
No.
I'm still waiting.
And I'm with you kind of on the reverse as far as Russ and Harden. I was looking at Russ from the standpoint of pace with a second unit, because high usage player who can drive and dish, who's still a guy that's going to get around the screen, get downhill, and kick it to bigs or kick it out. You know what I mean? Like, that sort of thing where you can at least facilitate ball movement, even if Russ isn't the quintessential ball movement type of player. Gotcha. With Harden, if you get him in the pocket where you've got a decent enough passer, which Plumlee was until he got hurt, then you can start facilitating it to Kawhi in the corner, to PG in the corner. The problem is going to be, A, how does Russ feel, right? Because basically you're taking the ball out of his hands. And secondly, Paul George can get lost, and you don't want Paul George getting lost. Monica, this might work when one of those dudes gets hurt.
Honestly, Evany, zero shade. I did not mean this in a shady way, but I had been asked about this a couple times, and I'm like, I think it works because you don't expect to have all four of them healthy consistently. Like, that's just kind of is what it is.
No, here's the thing. The evidence is the evidence. Like, those guys have averaged, you know, maybe 45, 47 games since coming to L.A. And James Harden, which is the weird thing for James, he plays a lot of games. He plays a lot of minutes. So you understand that he can carry an offense. He led the league in assists last year. But because Steph and LeBron have found the fountain of youth, we think guys in year 15 ain't in year 15 no more.
Let me tell you, because you know I'm a fan of the Good Word with Goodwill. I listened to your pod over the summer. I was on the Stairmaster in Vegas doing the WNBA semis, Vegas and Dallas. And I listened to your pod where you went through the age of our superstars. And I was like, turn this up. Somebody else, please. Like, we keep talking about LeBron at 39, like the guys in his class are 10 years younger. And that's not the case.
All these dudes are old. You know how I know all these dudes is old, Monica?
Because you're getting
my ass is old. That's why. You wake up, you be in the gym, you like, and me and my best friend go to the gym every day. He like, man, we feeling every bit of insert age here, right? I ain't gonna put my age out there. I ain't gonna put his age. Man, we be like, bro, we old. We the listen, old, not old dudes in the club. We just old. And I can't imagine old.
Hello, look, I'm not that old, but I'm starting to feel, I turned 34 my birthday. I played pickup on Tuesday night with some friends at the Nike building. Let me tell you, Thursday, I was like, babe, please can you massage my feet? My feet still hurt so bad from running up and down the floor. So listen, and I'm in regular people shape. And I'm prime. But the body is going to tell you everything.
Yeah, Monica, if y'all haven't paid attention to Monica's Instagram, her and the kettlebells be bowing. All right? Sometimes the kettlebells be winning. I be rooting for, like, Monica, like, swing that thing up. You know, that kettlebell, I don't know if it's 35 pounds, 25 pounds, whatever it is.
They vary.
That thing be fighting you back. Okay? That's why I fight battles, I can win, right? I fight battles, I can win. Speaking of battles, Monica has the task of being the radio analyst for the New York Knicks, which means on one hand, 3-game winning streak, right? On one hand, they've got, I think, the third highest point differential in the Eastern Conference. Like, they got the point differential of a team that is pretty damn good, but they 5-4. On the other hand, Monica, you have Julius Randle, who was shooting 33% from the field.
Don't use the whole season. Let's just use the last 3 games. But anyway, go ahead.
See, there we go. And his usage is still very high. Like, I don't know how to take this mixed bag of evidence because they're second in defense, right?
Mm-hmm,
and RJ Barrett is taking a step. Mm-hmm. What's real and what's not? Tell me.
What is real is the defense. Mitchell Robinson and I will probably tout my little cap. I will be inserting his name in all the Defensive Player of the Year conversations until you show me otherwise, right? The defense is real. What to me is, the numbers are not lying, so let me describe the numbers. What to me is currently deceiving is the field goal percentage numbers on the season. I think Jalen Brunson, his opportunity to play for Team USA, and Josh Hart, Team USA, Julius, remember, surgery offseason, right? Like, I think those two guys in particular, bodies felt a little bit different than maybe they had to start previous seasons. I will even argue that I hope that these hold, but the numbers might be a little bit deceiving on RJ, who's off to a career start. They might regress a little bit more to his mean. I still think he's going to take a leap this year, but right now he's shooting like blistering from the field and from three. And I just don't know if that's going to hold. What is real, in addition to the defense, to me, the last 3 games of their homestand, and actually I'll throw in one prior to that, when they move the basketball, they can get easy looks. Their consistency in moving the basketball and being lulled to sleep by this ISO ball is still a growing thing. Last year, I think the numbers were pretty crazy in terms of they were only successful on like 0.77% of their isolation plays, but were one of the top 5 teams when it came to isolation plays. So you can see it. There's this tug and pull this year of like, I'm still that guy, I can get one off, versus like, if y'all don't move this basketball and trust one another, you know what I mean? So I think that to me, this is a team that's poised to kind of repeat the season that they had last year. Philly's obviously coming into form. I think at one point your high hopes was Philly was such a mess that maybe they could be a third in the East. But I think 4 or 5 is probably going to be where they finish again. They're going to be formidable. Their defense is a force to be reckoned with. You're going to have to deal with Mitchell Robinson. Big shout out to Mitch, though, too. I think he's been incredibly alert, engaged, and he is staying off the floor. He fell for the first time the other day versus Charlotte. And I was like, oh, my God, that's the first time I've seen Mitch on the floor this year. Like, because last year he used to drive me crazy. Like, stay on your 2 feet. But this year he's been really good. And I think Dante DiVincenzo and Josh Hart are really finding their rhythm with that second unit and allowing this team to start pushing in some in transition. Tibbs was pretty straight about it in the middle of this early season slump, so to speak. They needed to find easy baskets. And when they find easy baskets, they're a formidable team. But when they settle for ISO, it's a little bit of Brick City.
And you know what it is? It becomes contagious. You see one guy cooking on, and they got all left-handers, and left-handers are...
Sure do.
And if you're a left-hander like me, you see left-handed players, it brings you back to the days of Nick Van Exel and Damon Stoudemire. We used to have a little in-out move. Jalen Brunson, not quite, because he's a little built more like a tank. He wasn't like a skinny guy going to the cup like that, but I digress. You know what I mean? But when you've got left-handed players, you know, Julius, left hands, goes, tries to go strong side. RJ tries to go middle. You know, Jalen tries to put you on his hip. Mm-hmm. Once you see another guy do that, then ball movement goes out the window completely. So it almost has to be like everybody has to be committed to saying, okay, we're going to swing this ball around. We're going to make sure that everybody gets involved. That's why I wasn't tripping when Mitchell said, hey, I'm not touching the ball. We can see you not touching the ball. Mm-hmm. That's a problem when you have a big man, in my opinion. When you have a big man that's running the floor and defending the paint, and he can be a vertical spacer, and he's not even being involved in the dribble handoffs because everything mm-hmm. is so ISO heavy. So I think Tibbs has something that he has to monitor there. You know, and 100%. I think he notices it. It's just a matter of getting guys to actually go through it.
It's like the worst kept secret when it comes to this team, right? Like, and even Tibbs, what you're accustomed to hearing him say is you draw to and move the basketball, right? I need you to understand you draw to and move the basketball, not draw to and prove how much time you spent in the gym and try to make this move. Like, no, like draw to and move the basketball. And especially for a guy like RJ, as he's gotten going, to me, he's been best off the move so far this season. Whether that's coming off of a curl, catching, making a decisive move, whether that's catch and shoot, like as opposed to trying to ISO and pull up into a three. I have said this since I've covered the Knicks, that Julius is best 3 to 4 dribbles or less. Like when he's decisive and not getting into that spin, here comes the help. Now I'm going to power my way through. I think the thing with Jalen to me has been the most curious, but he's had games where he's gone off for 5+ threes so far. Mm-hmm. And he is a guy that is so just mindful of the big picture in terms of leadership that I don't see him forcing it right now because it is so early in the season. I thought the last game, and Jalen didn't even play. Actually, he kind of went off in the third quarter. In the first half, I think he might have had just 7 points. There was that effort, to your point, to get Mitch involved on a much higher level. And just easy baskets that are energy baskets. If Mitch can dunk the ball from the rim, like, that's no sweat off his back. It's easy, too, and the entire team then gets that energy back on the defensive end.
Yeah, and you're funny. You brought up a great point, Monica, about the guys who played over the summer. Usually we're used to, at least in 08, 12, 16, the Olympic years, those guys playing and then coming back the next year and hitting the ground running, right? They played in 09, in the 08 Olympics. Dwayne Wade mm-hmm. had his best individual year. Kobe Bryant won MVP. In 12, LeBron came in and won his damn near unanimous MVP. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. But it seems like guys this year, Austin Reeves in LA, and a few other guys, like you just mentioned, this summer just seemed to take a lot more out of them so that they came in a little bit slower, almost to your point about the Clippers, where guys haven't played together because you have mm-hmm. it's a slower ramp up because of all the time that you spent over the summer playing USA basketball. Like, I don't think we can discount that.
I don't think we can. And you got to listen to the guys you just mentioned and then think about this vast representation of U.S. basketball, point. Right?
Yes. Like, it's a line between Dwayne Wade and Jalen Brunson.
And I love Jalen, but this past USA team was very much, all right, the little bros trying to get in position for the Olympics versus you was talking about bona fide Olympic guys.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? First ballot Hall of Famer types dudes. And I'm, listen, Jalen absolutely could end up finish his career and be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility in my mind. But at various points in their career, there was already a well-established lather with those guys you mentioned versus our guys who are, frankly, fighting for spots on the Olympic team.
Yeah, no, and it's funny, the Knicks as a whole, I don't think since I've been a beat writer, I started beat writing in 2009, okay? I think you were still in college then. God, I'm old.
Was.
All right, yeah. Maybe I was a prodigy. All right, whatever, I wasn't, but that's how it goes, right? But when I started beat writing in 2009, the Knicks, since then, the Knicks have never been what you would call a stable organization with draft picks, future draft picks, cap space. They've always been sort of pining away for whoever that next big thing is, right? Pining away for Kevin Durant, pining away for Carmelo, pining away for LeBron, the pipe dream, and all this other stuff, right? I feel like now they can be more discerning.
Yeah.
Because you hear the stuff about Donovan Mitchell. You hear the stuff about Karl Towns. You hear the stuff about Joel Embiid. If none of those guys wind up being a fit, of course, with Embiid being the MVP and being right up the street, that's a lot less likely. But for anybody else, the Knicks don't have to say, we're going to give up all of our assets, all of our good players, everything that we have that we're building. Even if we're just a 4 seed in the meantime, we're not desperate. And I just think that speaks to sort of organizational stability that they hadn't had. Like Scott Perry, who's no longer there, was a huge part of that. And I had him on the podcast a couple weeks ago. That's a huge part of being able to attract a free agent that's the right free agent or the right trade target, right?
I'm with you 100%. And I always shout out Knicks fans. They have shown me a tremendous amount of love. But I know this summer I had a few different conversations with folks just on the street at different events. I was not deterred by this team staying pat, like remaining the same team and their ability to build continuity. Because to me, that is an underrated element of all of this. There are, I don't even want to say a handful, three superstars that when you bring them, you also bring in a coach typically, right? That we've seen in recent history. Let's go to the last 10 years or so. Otherwise, guys that want to join programs want to see that y'all got something going that they want to be a part of. And so for me, I was completely okay with them not doing anything splashy. The few additions they made, the couple of Villanova guys and Ryan Arch and Dante DiVincenzo, Daquan Jeffries. I loved Obi, but I don't know that Obi fit this system well.
Right.
And so that was, you know, kind of bittersweet, but I hope he's crushing it, obviously, doing his thing in Indiana. But I'm with you. The continuity matters, especially for a group where they're not going to overwhelm you with their athleticism and explosiveness. They're going to play tough, gritty defense, clog the paint, get on the boards. And then, as they continue to grow this season, they frankly are going to have to execute you to death. Like, their offense and their ability to make adjustments, they're going to have to be smart. And then you bank on Jalen and Julius and hopefully RJ having all-star caliber types of years. But to me, for a group like this, continuity is as important as anything.
Yeah, you talk about the program, and we make this joke about the CAA Knicks and everything else. You know what I mean? Like, this is just funny. But Tibbs is now in a spot where he is stable, where he is mm-hmm. in sync with Leon Rose. They're not, there's no battle, you know, there's no perceived battle, public battle, anything like that over power and credit. So both of them can equally do their jobs without wondering about the other. Subsequently, the Knicks are 5-4. I feel like every team in the NBA is either 5-4 or 4-5 or 4-6. The Suns are 4-6. The Lakers are under 500. Like, yeah, Dallas and Denver, like, those teams are really good. Boston, really good. I feel like everybody, Monica, is sort of trying to find their way early. Maybe that's parity. Maybe that's sort of the injuries and sort of the, you know, some of the new rosters. But I don't feel like any team should be terribly upbeat or terribly downtrodden about how they've started this year, including the Knicks.
I agree. I completely agree. I don't know. Like I said, I keep saying 10 is maybe who we find out who teams actually are. It's probably closer to 20. Various teams have had a bunch of games at home. The Knicks have already had sort of a brutal scheduling run here. They've had two back-to-backs already. They'll have a back-to-back again at the end of this week. Like, they've been on the road. Like, there's a lot to consider, I think. I definitely think that New Orleans loss for the Knicks was kind of built in because of scheduling. But anyway, so yeah, there's a lot to consider in this first 9-10 games so far. I think for me, the things that I do think are going to be true in the NBA at large that we've seen so far this season, Denver's back. Like, and if anybody thought that they weren't going to be back, like, I don't know what to tell you. Tyrese Maxey is about to have a career year. That yes. man is on yes. fire.
Yes.
I don't know about you, Vinny. I know folks got Lakers top four out of the East. I mean, out of the West.
I got questions.
I'm just not sure on that one. And look, granted, they've had a ton of injuries so far. But I think that one still might have more questions than it does answers. And I'm a huge Gabe Vincent fan. Like, I'm a big Gabe Vincent fan. But we got to see on that one. And we mentioned Tyrese Maxey, like, the top three in the East are still going to be, and the Bucks look kind of crazy recording this podcast today on November 12th or 13th, whatever the day is. But I still think it's the Bucks, the Knicks, or the, excuse me, the Bucks, the Sixers, and the Celtics.
I saw Philly the other night in Detroit. And so this is the day before everything happened with Kelly Oubre. Like, really bizarre situation. Like, thank so goodness crazy. He's okay.
Right.
Really bizarre. Like, I won't even, let's just say bizarre. I'm going to just leave it at that because I don't even want to speculate anything like that, but just let's say really bizarre. But I saw Philly, and it's easy to say addition by subtraction. James is gone. They've got the oxygen out of the room and everything else, and guys can just play. Tyrese Maxey is one of those guys who he's always smiling. He's mm-hmm. always joking. He's always so poking. Joyful. Yeah. It's an energy that's there with those guys. Cause Joel Embiid is not, he can be the troll and everything else, but he can be, he can be Eeyore. He can be moody. You know what I mean? Like that sort of thing.
Eeyore.
He's Eeyore. Right. So I think that energy can help them. Like Monica, I didn't think that this was going to help them at all. Because I didn't know how good Tyrese Maxey was, not as a 6'2" player, but as a 6'2" player who I'm asking to be my second best player. That was my question with him.
Right, right.
I stuck my foot in my mouth on that one because he's playing damn good.
I think I saw glimmers of it last year. He has exceeded expectations. I'm not going to act like I called this. But you could see just in terms of the way that he approached the game, the way Doc talked about him. And actually, when he was out last season for that, it was a chunk of time that he missed. I can't remember what the injury was. But even the way that the organization talked about the way he was studying the game and the way that he was engaged, like there are so many guys in the league that are incredibly talented. There are only a few that their love of their game, their joyfulness for what they get to do for a living, like kind of oozes off of them. And he's mm-hmm. in that class of guys. So I have been pleasantly surprised by how successful. I'm not going to say I'm surprised in that I didn't think he had star potential in the league. But the other part of this, though, Vinny, that I don't think people are talking about is Nick Nurse. In that, you look at when Nick Nurse was most successful with Toronto. We talk about that team and Kawhi Leonard, but you got to remember that's when, what's my guy that ended up being Sixth Man of the Year? Not Norm, but Norm's another one too. What's the centerpiece in Toronto? He's still there. I don't know if he won Sixth Man of the Year.
Pascal?
Yes. Pascal Siakam has sort of this breakout year, right? We talk about Kawhi being on that team, but that team defended, right? Like they had those long signature athletes that they still got. They played in space. They got out in transition. Like all of these things on the other side of the ball that weren't necessarily James Harden's cup of tea.
Right.
And so in general, Tyrese Maxey, as a guy that loves the game of basketball, is kind of unlocked on both sides. And you've got folks that are willing to scramble and crash the glass, wreak havoc defensively. And then the energy that you're getting on offense, you're also getting back on defense. Like, I'm looking at the Sixers very differently than I was at the beginning of the season.
No, I thought the 76ers were going to be the team that always knocked on the door of the conference finals and could never get through because they were just never going to be good as Miami in playoff mode or Milwaukee once fully healthy and Boston because they're just more talented than everybody else. I just saw them as a tier below, even though they talked a big game like they were in that same tier. The thing for me, Monica, with Philly is so underrated. And Nick Nurse said the other night in the postgame in Detroit, he said composure.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in that game, when you're playing against a team that's lost five straight, okay, cool. You can be down 16, you know you're coming back. But general playoff composure, whenever we've thought about the Philadelphia 76ers, or when we think about teams that never get over the hump, we're always thinking about meltdowns, right? Yep. We're thinking about you're up in a game six and you can't close it out and you just don't show up in a game seven. And we can say that for the 76ers in a bunch of different series, whether that's James Harden, whether that's Ben Simmons, whether that's Joel Embiid, quietly,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right? Don't say that too loud. I hear you.
Quietly, right? Go look at the numbers. Very Karl Malone-ish. Very, very Karl Malone-ish. Tyrese Maxey seems like a type of dude that does not scare. That if it's 5 minutes left in the game, mm-hmm. I'm not worried that the moment is going to be too big for him and that he's going to freeze up. And we may see it out here and be like, oh, yeah, guys should play hard and play like themselves all the time. It shouldn't matter if it's March or May. Yeah, that matters, right? And if he's not phased, Monica, I think that sort of lifts the entire team. Sometimes all you need is one guy to be able to say, all right, y'all, we've been here before. We're not going to panic. We're going to be okay. And that's so underrated and rare because we've seen all these teams have meltdowns.
Yep, I agree with you. And I think beyond Tyrese individually being like, I'm just going to play ball. Now, whether that means that he ends up hitting game winning basket or hypothetically or not, you can trust that he's not going to shy from the moment. I think that then has a trickle-down effect. Because I'm with you. Everybody jumps up and down about that game seven and game six. And I'm like, James Harden is a completely separate entity from Joel Embiid. Okay? Like, so to me, if you've got a team that is going to be disconnected, but you've got a guy that's always coming with the energy, I am actually very curious to see what this season might look like for Tobias Harris just by default.
Look, Monica, I swear you like reading my copy, okay? Because Tobias Harris is one of those dudes who can score from everywhere, mm-hmm. but he can get lost. He can like score a quick 8 or 10 points in the first quarter, and then you don't hear from him for the rest of the game. Not because he's breaking up the joint, but because they're not looking for him anymore. Mm-hmm. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And because you got James, because you had James, because you had Joel, and they command so much attention, that fourth guy or third guy often is lost in the shuffle. Tobias Harris is a 50, 40, 90 type. And maybe that's on low numbers. But if he's on low numbers, that means maybe we should be getting him more looks. And I feel like mm-hmm. that's an untapped commodity.
The doubles are absolutely coming for Tyrese. Like, they're coming. So there's going to be a point in the season where he's going to have to be able to adjust to handle that. Now, I don't know if that means he's slip dribbling and splitting double teams or whatever, or if he is more traditional point guard minded and looking for the open guys. But there's going to be room for Tobias Harris to eat. To me, far more cleaner than we've seen in his past. What, how long have you been in? 3 seasons?
This is his restricted free agency season. So, yeah, 3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for him to be 6'2", like, yeah. I don't think people realize when you're 6'2", and he's not big, like Jalen Brunson is the same height, but stockier, wider. He can create more space because he's got more upper body. Tyrese is just speed. He's quicks. You know what I mean? He's a taller Kemba Walker. And I didn't know there could be such a thing as a taller Kemba Walker because Kemba Walker is 5'11".
Hear me out, though. Tyrese, to me, is giving you shades of Steph over the dynasty.
Ooh. Like, I hear me out. Say more. Say more. Say more.
Hear
say
me
more.
Out. It's shades. I'm not saying that he's Steph. Don't nobody go crazy. But it is giving shades in terms of the quickness, moving without the basketball, the way that he can hit those shots from distance. And just, like, I think at that version of Steph, Tyrese maybe is getting to the paint a little bit more deliberately, as opposed to it being off of cuts and movements. But in terms of a guy that you're going to have to game plan for because he's going to shift defenses, especially Steph didn't have this in the same way, but like you're going to have to game plan for him individually just as much as you are for him in the two-man game with Joel. So in terms of a guy that you're going to have to account for and literally moving the floor based on where he is, it's shades of Steph.
Yes, that will get aggregated. I'm just letting you know now. That will get aggregated. The one
shades.
There we go. Outline. It's an outline of Steph. The one thing I will say is because Embiid doesn't like to roll, and I know we're going like way in the weeds for y'all, for basketball folks, but because Embiid doesn't like to roll on the pick and roll, he doesn't roll hard.
Right.
He kind of rolls half and he kind of pops out. That still leaves a lot of space mm-hmm. for Tyrese Maxey to actually go to the bucket, which is actually kind of what he needs. Like, you need someone to put rim pressure on a defense, like you need a, circling it back to you, like you need a Julius Randle, an RJ mm-hmm. Barrett to put mm-hmm. rim pressure on the defense. Like, I think we get so seduced by the 3-point shot. I think rim pressure is just as, if not more important as any other offensive element in basketball because it can create foul trouble and it's a lot more reliable than even a 40% 3-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have something there. Like put it like this. The reason I think the Celtics didn't make the finals last year was because their main guy who put pressure on the defense couldn't actually get to the rim because he lost the ball on the way to the rim.
Had a great offseason, worked on that.
Are we seeing that? I'm just curious. Are we seeing it?
I'll tell you tonight after the game.
Monica is in Boston on the first of a 4-game road swing where they're going to, I think, Washington, Minnesota, Charlotte, right?
Atlanta's in there first. Atlanta Wednesday.
Okay, Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Atlanta. They just play Charlotte. So it's Boston, Atlanta, D.C.
Washington, Charlotte, yep, and Minnesota before we go back to New York.
So because we got Monica here, and Monica's doing her first year, and you're gonna be doing more than half of these road games.
50.
What is
I got 50 games total, yeah.
50 games total. Monica, what is the schedule like for you? What's the road been like for you?
Shout out to my girl Megan McPeak, who's in her second year as the reporter for the Wizards. She's like,
love Megan.
Look out for the Four Seasons with the eucalyptus spa. She's absolutely right. And the hack she shared with me was, if y'all not arriving at places at the crack of dawn in the wee hours of the morning, just go try to walk for 20 to 30 minutes on the treadmill to get your blood circulating, because you spend so much time on planes. So shout out to the sisterhood that looks out with these hacks on how to survive. I think for me, Vinny, getting to the gym, there's nice gyms, thankfully, with the kettlebells at these hotels has been really, really good. The mattresses are always great. I'm big on your quality of sleep. But I think what is different is sometimes, especially Wednesdays, Thursdays, like, you might catch me on Get Up First Take from the hotel room. So, like, the work just doesn't stop, which I'm very thankful for. It's been a blessing. I am so excited about, and I feel it already, the opportunity to grow as an analyst just from seeing teams around the league, shaking hands, meeting people, helping to connect. Not that I'm interested in being a newsbreaker any type of way, but I am very mindful of my credibility. The opportunity to continue to learn is probably the thing that I'm most excited about as we get started.
Yeah, look, I'm going to tell you, from a beat writer who was not traveling on like private planes and all that other stuff. No, it still can beat on you. Like the travel can beat up on you and it can catch you. And I'm not in a eucalyptus type.
Yes, eucalyptus. Uh-huh.
I'm not even, Monica, I don't even sleep good. I don't sleep good on the road. I don't sleep good at the crib. Like, I'm lucky my skin don't look like, you know, I'm lucky my skin still looks like black don't crack right now. You know what I mean?
Because
it probably shouldn't. I appreciate that. send your single friends my way. No.
Noted. We're going to get to that romance after all. I will say this, though, because you're right. And I think my first experience with the road really beating up on you was covering the finals. And I was like, yo, I'm just ready for this to end. And I ain't even play basketball. Like, this is crazy. Shout out to my folks over at Drip Hydration. I can't do it too often. Every 3 to 4 months, get a good IV with a good boost of all the medicines and immune boosting things, vitamins. It's amazing.
Monica, I don't think people understand. By the time you get to game 4 of the finals, you're not rooting. People think, oh, you're rooting for one team or another. No, I'm rooting for my vacation. I'm rooting for it to end. By the time game 5 comes around, you're like, oh, it's 3-1. It's either go home or, okay, y'all, we can go to Miami. It's either go home or get back on a plane and fly across another 2 time zones. Home me, please.
Honest to God. Home. There's a picture when the Warriors won in Boston. Of course, this was the infamous year where my take was terrible and wrong, and the window clearly wasn't closed. They won. Shout out to the Warriors. But there's a picture from Sports Illustrated, one of them, and I'm just sitting. Steph is celebrating. You can see me at the press row, just sitting. And a few Warriors fans have, like, tweeted me, ah, you were salty. No, I was tired. Like, I was exhausted by that point. I was just like, oh, it's over. Thank God. Like, I'm ready to go home. Boston is closer to New York. Perfect. Like, I don't have to go back across the country.
Monica, that thing beats on you. And that was as far west as you could go.
Uh-huh.
With Oakland, and as far east as you could go. I don't think you can go further east on the NBA map than Boston. And, baby, we would look. By the time game 5 ended, like, Steph had the great game 4.
Yep.
Jordan Poole saved them in game 5. Seems like they missed Jordan Poole now because, you know, they don't have. hey, it was Monica. It was all really good a couple weeks ago. But
sure
now
was.
Clay ain't hitting nothing.
Mm-mm, he's struggling.
Chris Paul looking like a man who's 38 years old. Like, we talked about that age stuff. And
20 games in.
And true. And while Jordan Poole is having a time of his life in Washington, they ain't winning no games. You know what
that
I mean?
That baby is having a time, okay?
Hey, he's like, okay, Jordan, where would you like to go? I want to go where there's going to be a bunch of people in the front row to see me play. Jordan, we're going to send you to Chocolate City.
Yes, indeed, baby. Welcome. He is having a time. The Wizards are actually my home team. We are entering a rebuild, which I'm excited about. I wonder how long it's going to last. This is the next question.
Monica, I'm sorry. I thought y'all been rebuilding since I was born.
No. The rebuild, no. Don't do that. They couldn't signal no rebuild till they moved Brad. Like, this is the official beginning of the rebuild in the 2020s.
Monica, the Wizards haven't won 50 games since Michael Jackson released Off the Wall.
Hold on, that's not true, because I was at the playoff game with the Celtics when John was still John Wallace that we know, doing the Dougie, getting it done. Don't do that.
No, they was like 48 wins. That's what that was. That's like 48 wins. It wasn't 50.
It wasn't 50. They were a playoff team. They were one game away from the conference finals.
They've been a game away from the conference finals a couple times and still ain't win 50 games.
Ah, now I gotta look back at that. Okay, all right, I'll give you that. Maybe I think I gotta look.
It's all good. I know the numbers. 50 games off the wall. I get it. That's the saying. They ain't win 50 games with John Wall. They hadn't won 50 games since Michael Jackson put out Off the Wall. Like, I'm sorry. That's your adopted team, Monica. I live in Detroit. I can't say Jack Bo Diddley.
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
Mm-mm. Bad basketball here.
Jalen Durant, the Asar is in Detroit.
Asar is in Detroit.
Asar looks exciting. I watched their game the other day, or a week ago, because they had played the Thunder. I think I was getting ready for my Thunder game.
Yep.
Asar looks promising. It's good to see Cade back on the floor.
Yep.
Jalen Duren. Is he a high motor guy? Yeah, Jalen Duren is an athlete, a bona fide athlete.
Is Cade Cunningham a high motor guy? No.
I know he's very smart and cerebral. Okay, I guess the question should not have been just high motor or not, but does he have an NBA motor, I guess would be my question.
He has an NBA motor, but not a second gear.
Copy that. Okay.
He's a smaller, put it like this. The thing I've always said about him was, if he were quicker, he'd be Grant Hill. If he were more athletic, he'd be Grant Hill. If he were bigger, he'd be Luka Doncic. But because he's not, he's in sort of this tweener spot where even the easy shots are hard.
Got it. Okay.
You know what I mean? Look.
That makes sense. That's well done.
Thank you. We're in a talent, I won't say talent boom. I think we're at the end of a talent boom. In the NBA, where the old guys are still hanging on, the young guys are like the Houston Rockets winning 60 games in a row. I don't know what we're supposed to say about Ime Udoka at this point. I don't even know if we're allowed to mention his name. Is he like Candyman? Can we say his name three times and something happens? Or is that 20 games too? Or we can say Ime Udoka's name out loud?
Let's make it 20 games. But I'm going to say that is a good coach who, you know, unfortunate decisions off the court caused him a job where he probably would have won a couple of championships.
Man, oh man. There's, ladies and gentlemen, Monica McNutt. There was something I was going to say, and I'm going to not say it, because me and Monica both like getting our checks, okay? You can catch Monica McNutt on ESPN, where she's doing Get Up, and she's doing First Take, and she's doing NBA Today, and never mind. And she's also the ESPN Knicks radio, MSG radio analyst.
ESPN New York, he was right.
Okay, ESPN New York radio analyst for the New York Knicks. Anything else you need to tell us about Monica that the people should know?
No, life is good. I'm enjoying it.
That was not a setup. That was not a setup.
Listen, I got to circle back to 20 games. Let's pencil me in for January when we know who some of these teams are.
We're going to bring Monica back for the Love Doctor episode of The Good Word. Okay? It's going to be a three-man weave. I'm letting y'all know I'm going to put myself on a hot seat. It's going to be Monica on one side. It's going to be our friend Chelsea Sherrod on the other side.
Oh, wow.
And we going to have at it. I'ma stand up for the fellas. We gonna do it. Yeah.
Listen, I will just give you my caption for such a conversation. I am the eternal optimist who's very clear on her boundaries. That's all. And very honest in dating. I think if more people were honest in dating, the world would be without a bunch of problems. And probably a bunch of kids, but that's fine. That's another conversation for another day.
Look, you can't be honest with somebody else if you ain't honest with yourself.
Hello? That's
once again, woo! Monica, see, you're trying to get us in trouble. You are trying to get us in trouble. We'll be trying to stay on time and make sure that the people at Yahoo are not going to say that's the last episode of The Good Word. All right. So no, until we see Monica McNutt again, once again, y'all, ESPN and ESPN radio for the New York Knicks. Monica, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate you as always.
Thanks for having me.
That's all we've got for today's episode. Thanks to producer Sean, who's in for producer John, Evan and Ron behind the glass, of course, doing all the videos and social media that you guys see. Don't forget to rate us and review us. All of that good stuff. Dan Devine will be back tomorrow for another episode of Divine Intervention. I will be back on Wednesday after I come back from Skinny Bowl in Oklahoma City, Chet and Wimby. I'm there for that. I plan on having some fun there. So until then, everybody, be safe.